This is the Press Pass with Chris Ryan.
This is where you hear unique conversations with the best athletes, coaches, and general managers in sports.
I think you appreciate each and every one. Each and every one is special in their own way. And
I play with two guys that they were on top of their game on a nightly basis, and people get spoiled. You know, they saw Manny, they saw David, so they start taking people for granted.
An opportunity for me. I know I need to help my team now, so you know, the better I play, the better it'll be for us.
I think it's one of the most important things is focus and consistency.
And welcome to the Press Pass here on KXL 189, 1450, and NHTalkRadio.com. I am Chris Ryan, so please could join us for the show. We're going to go in-depth on the Patriots, Bruins, UNH men's hockey team, on the baseball playoffs as well on the program this evening. Patriots are 6-0, this after they blew a 14-0 lead but pulled away to beat the Giants 35-14. Patriots defense and special teams were great once again. The offense pretty depleted, no Dorsett or Burkhead in this game. The offensive line is already dealing with its issues. I want to let you know first, though, that the show tonight presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. For more information, visit prescription-center.com. So, yeah, the Patriots are 6-0. They beat the Giants. They continue to take care of the hapless aspects of the NFL with a more challenging schedule coming ahead. Let's hear from Patriots head coach Bill Belichick about how good the defense and special teams have been.
Kind of an odd game. You know, anytime you get three scores in the game that are non-offensive touchdowns, that's it's kind of a season's worth and all happened in one game. So, you know, a couple of big plays for us on the block punt, on the fumble. You know, we took advantage of those opportunities.
Here's Patriots quarterback Tom Brady.
Happy we won. Happy to get to 6-0. We just grinded it out pretty good.
It's the Press Pass here on KXL. Bruins home opener is tomorrow night. We'll talk with Tuukka Rask, Charlie McAvoy, and more coming up just a little bit here on the show. Also, the head coach of the UNH men's hockey team, Mike Sousa, is on the program, and Dave D'Onofrio with more on the Pats and the baseball playoffs. This is the Press Pass here on KXL tonight, presented by the Prescription Center. This is the Press Pass here on KXL tonight, presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Riverbend Community Mental Health and Choices NH Addiction Recovery Services. Riverbend wants you to know the treatment works. For more information, check out riverbendcmhc.org. Our Pucks in Deep segment, also presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Get your youngsters signed up to play hockey today by going to concordyouthhockey.org. Bruins begin the season at 3-1 after a successful West Coast trip. They are home Saturday to take on the Jersey Devils to begin their home season. And I'd have to talk with a number of Bruins players at Media Day, including netminder Tuukka Rask.
Just talk a little bit about your outlook for the season, being back with the group and the opportunities that are in front of you guys.
It's another long season starting Thursday, so I thought we'd look good in the training camp. We're practicing with high pace and trying to transfer that in the, you know, right off the bat on Thursday. So, yeah, I mean, excited.
Did last year kind of get behind you as soon as you got here with the group in training camp, or does that still linger with you? What still linger with you, no matter what?
No, it was behind me when I left the town in June. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's hockey. It's over. Get ready for the next one. That's how it is. There's no time to think what happened last year, 2 years ago. You know, it's very competitive league. Every year is a new year, and you have to be ready to play. So, you know, but good thing is that we're kind of proving to ourselves that we can be one of the elite teams, and that's what we're up against again.
You're one of the more accountable athletes that you'll see in this town. Things go well, go poorly, you're right there. Where did that come from in regards to your accountability, where you've always stood up and been very honest about what's taking place, whether you prefer poorly or well?
Well, I think good leadership, you learn from good leaders, you know, and kind of how they carry themselves. But then as far as, you know, the position I play in, it's pretty black and white. There's no reason to try to sugarcoat your performances or whatever. So, you know, then you don't have to answer too many questions when you just keep it as it is.
Was that tough for you when you were younger, or was it always there? Where you said, I'm the goaltender and things are going to go well and they're going to go poorly. More often than not, I'm going to get the questions about why things went bad than when they went good. Kind of like a closer in baseball. You don't get the closers get talked to unless, you know, you lose the game.
Yeah.
do that something that you learned through a period of time, or is it always that accountability always been there with you?
I think it just came naturally. I haven't got no media education or nothing. You know, right. Just kind of you grow with it and you learn how to answer questions properly and you know face the storm or you know, whatever. I think that's just part of who I am.
Is accountability one of the most important parts of leadership and the team structure in your view? In other words, if the best players on the team are deflecting or unwilling to stand up and to answer questions and kind of deflecting that onto some of the other players, if you guys, you, Patrice, Z, and aren't willing to be there, does that create ripple effects?
Probably. I think for me it's always been an automatic when you play a game, you just talk to the media and that's it. It doesn't matter if you lose or win. So that's just the way it's been. And then the young guys maybe see that and they know that they're going to be the next guys up. That's just how it goes, and we're happy to do it. I mean, you know, we gotta be the voice of the team sometimes, and you know, we try to give our best opinions.
And that is something that I've always been amazed with Tuukka Rask, and why he is a go-to guy for media is that he is brutally honest in regards to his own play, his team's play, and just about everything else. And so that is something that is really significant in an athlete to have that accountability. And when you're the goaltender, one of the star players in the team, it kind of sets the tone for everyone else. Here is Bruins captain Zdeno Chara, who, of course, is more of a lead-by-example type of player. He'll lean on guys, and he is a presence in regards to how long he's been in the league, his physical stature, and also his physical work ethic and acumen is very impressive to all the players. Here is Zdeno Chara.
Just talk about being back here with this group once again and what it's like looking ahead towards the season, a long season, and trying to process what it's going to be like moving forward.
Yeah, it's nice to be back, and it's nice to be being after the camp and getting ready for the regular season and opening, on the road. I think it's a great feeling to have everybody, almost everybody back. You know, it's the same group, so we know each other really well, and I think it's very exciting.
How different is this year going in knowing what the team is compared to previous years where you were trying to get to that elite level? Now you know you're there, you're on the cusp of winning the cup, and is there a different mindset for the group?
Well, we're not there yet. I mean, we're just starting just like everybody else. I think we have every team being highly motivated to have a good season, so I think it's going to be something we're going to realize that we have to work really hard for, and obviously starts with game one.
So certainly a lot of focus on, as I mentioned, what the Bruins defensemen are going to do this year, and it's going to kind of be where we look here in this segment of the show, and looking at the Bruins. And there's Chara, who's, of course, been there forever at this point in time, been in the league since the 1990s. And the Bruins, though, this year, I'm going to be really interested to see what they get from their rising star players. And there's Charlie McAvoy, who just has the world ahead of him at this point. Same thing for Brandon Carlisle. Guys with great postseasons and, I think really became leaders and became, in some ways, despite the fact in their early 20s, veterans with the experience they accumulated during the course of the postseason. They have Torrey Krug, who's in his prime pretty much at this point as well, on the back end. Connor Clifton, who we're going to hear from, Matt Grizzlick. And the Bruins are very good on the blue line. And that is certainly one of the strengths for this hockey club. Here is Charlie McAvoy.
Charlie, just your outlook for this team, excitement to be back with the group and getting the season started.
Well, very excited. Really just can't wait to get going. I think we've all been pushing each other in camp here. We have a tremendous group of hockey players here. Every day has been good, just been growing, getting better, getting back to where we want to be. And now it gets serious, now it gets real. And you want to come out and you want to be, the best you can right away. I think we'll just find it. Collectively some people find it at different times, but we'll all be picking each other up, leaning on each other to try and get out to a hot start here.
Last year there was such a great blend between the veterans and the young players and it created the success you guys had. Do you see the young players, yourself included, stepping up and having bigger roles this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think the reason why we had the success we had is that we all just pull the rope. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that it's one more than the other. I'm sure on certain nights it is, but collectively as a group, we all pick each other up. Doesn't matter whether you're, you know, whether you're first year or you're Z and you're 22. We all pull the rope in the same direction, and we all pick each other up. And you know, I think that's why we have such a special group.
Tuukka mentioned that Game 7 was gone pretty much as soon as he left town, but it seems like you're mentioning that it's going to linger a little bit with you in terms of providing motivation, but you can't be that motivated in October, so to speak. How do you carry it with you but also kind of put it behind you?
Well, I mean, like, I'm not trying to carry it with me, really. I mean, it's gone. You can't go back and you can't change the past. But what we do have is an opportunity to dictate our future here. So in that regard, that's what we're going to try and do. We're going to try and get on the road here and get off to a good start. You know, just all the things I've alluded to, just trying to find our form and get out and have some fun on this trip and you know, hopefully get a couple wins.
At the beginning of the season, what do you do in regards to goal setting for yourself personally? Do you say, I want to be an all-star this year? How do you go about saying this is what I want to do?
No, I just want to be a consistent hockey player. I want to be the best player I can be for this team. That's it. Those are always my goals.
Now, Charlie McAvoy right there. Now we talk with Connor Clifton, who's another guy that stepped up and had a good postseason for the Bruins and is likely to have a big role on this hockey club this year.
Just talk about your mindset going into this season here with the Bruins, both personally and from a team perspective, and your expectations overall.
Team perspective, I think it's been pretty good preseason. Getting better each day, and we want to continue to do that. I think we'll be ready for Thursday. Personally, I'm happy to be here. I mean, it looks like I have a spot right now, but obviously a lot of things change if I learned anything from last year. You know, I played 8 good games. I didn't play good my 9th, and then my 10th game didn't happen until months later, and I spent a lot of time in Prov. So I think just got to embrace that. And you know, every day I want to prove my worth and prove that I belong on this team.
Yeah, a lot of defensemen talk about, you know, building their game from their net out, basically, and having, you know, success in your own end, keeping things simple. How do you balance that? Because you're a very talented offensive player as well, and the team wants to see that from you. How do you balance wanting to make sure you make an impact, but also be, you know, very careful in terms of not wanting to make mistakes?
I think you find the line. Obviously, we're defensemen first, all of us, whoever's playing on Thursday. You know, you're a defenseman first, and you got to worry about the D zone. Obviously, you want to play simple, get the puck to our forward, to a really good. But obviously, there's always a time for that weak side D to jump into play and maybe join the rush and help out your forwards. Obviously, everyone wants to score. You know, goals are great, but there's obviously a line and you got to find it. And I think I've done a good job in the past 2 years of, you know, finding that line. You can't go every shift, right? But when an opportunity presents itself, you want to go.
What did you learn about yourself playing at the highest level last year? You had big goals, you had big moments. What did you learn about yourself overall?
I learned that it's a lot easier to play with, you know, these guys. The structure is just,
right,
it's so good. Everyone's where they're supposed to be. Everyone's helping you out. Everyone wants the puck. So just teamwork is everything, communication.
How about the leadership side of things, that accountability within this room? What's different about the way this group operates as compared to others, perhaps, that you've experienced at lower levels?
I think there's a closeness, and you don't want to let your teammates down. You're gonna be there. There's obviously mistakes. It's a fast game, right? And you want to be there to bail out whoever made that mistake, or hopefully you know your teammates will have your back when you make a mistake. I think that's huge.
The final thing, it seems like the biggest theme is that the group, as soon as training camp began, even Tuukka talked about just as soon as he left town after Game 7 that it was over and he was moving on. Does it feel like amongst everybody here that you guys have moved on completely as you enter this season, or are there still, you know, aspects of last year which linger in a positive way, perhaps?
Obviously, you take all the experiences that you learn. Did we forget that we lost in a Game 7 of the Stanley Cup run? No, we probably won't ever. But it's a, you know, it's a new season. We turn the page. We're ready to go this year. And obviously, everyone's in the same spot. You know, you gotta work your way back to that point, and we're excited for the challenge.
one of the best parts of last year's team was the mix of veterans and young players taking on, you know, bigger roles. Do you see that being an even bigger part this year with yourself on the back end, Charlie McAvoy, obviously Jake DeBrusque on the forward lines? Pasternak's already obviously a superstar in the league. Do you see there being more of a leadership role in terms of production for the younger players in this team this year?
Yeah, I mean, every year, each player wants to get better, and you prepare in the summer to do just that. Obviously, we have high expectations for our leadership group and those superstars we have. We have so many of them. But yeah, I guess it's a team game, right? Everyone's going to contribute night in and night out. We're going to look for exactly that.
That is Connor Clifton. This is the Press Pass here on KXL. Up next, we stay with the hockey theme. So we're joined by the head coach of the UNH men's hockey team, Mike Souza, as UNH begins their season tonight here on Friday at Miami of Ohio.
We are here with Chuck at P&N Automotive. And Chuck, of course, is the best in the Capital Region, voted such by the Hippo Press for two straight years. And Chuck, what should people know as we head into the fall here about their vehicles?
Depending on the age and the mileage of the car, if you're up around 100,000, it's going to be due for spark plugs, most likely some fluid flushes, making sure the antifreeze is good, and the usual stuff as in a cabin filter, so the heater and defrost works better. A few of the other things that happen in our part of the country is the brake caliper slides get sticky and the brake pads freeze in what we call the brake brackets. So it's a good idea to check for that, because that can cause it break the lock up prematurely, or if you have anti-lock brakes, to drive your anti-lock brakes crazy.
That is Chuck. He's the best in the Capital Region. 140 Pleasant Street. Phone number 225-4313. PNN Automotive.
This is the Press Pass here on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Press Pass tonight presented by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. And this segment of the show brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Sign up your youngster to play hockey via the Concord Youth Hockey Association. For information, check out ConcordYouthHockey.org. Excited to be joined on the program right now by the head coach of the UNH men's Wildcats hockey team. He is Mike Souza. The team begins their season tonight as they are in Ohio against Miami of Ohio, and tonight and tomorrow contests there, and we're going to preview the season and talk a little about what's going on with the UNH men's hockey team with Mike Souza. Mike, how are you?
I'm well, Chris. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Appreciate you joining us for the show. So take us through, opening night for you, particularly as, a coach as compared to as a player. I mean, is it the same in terms of, the excitement, the anticipation? You're obviously building a game plan, putting that in, and there's the more, philosophical side of things. But what's it like getting ready for the start of a season?
I think there are elements to it that are similar, and there's that sort of apprehension that I'm, I don't really know what's going to happen tonight. Don't know. Every game you have that sort of, I guess they're, if you want to call them those butterflies, if you will, that you would have as a player and have as a coach. I mean, I think the greatest difference is as a player, you're worried about yourself. And as a coach, you're worried about the whole group. You're worried about, I'm responsible for everyone. So, you want to make sure that everyone's, on the same page and coaching staff's aligned. And I think that's the biggest difference. As a player, you're focused solely on what you need to do to prepare. And as a coach, the responsibility is a lot greater in the sense of worrying about a lot more stuff. But, other than that, I mean, that's every week and that's everybody. I mean, as it pertains to the first game of the year, I think there's that nervous excitement, as I mentioned before, and I think our guys feel prepared. I feel that we're prepared. I feel that we're in great shape, and I think we've got great leadership, and I'm excited to see our team play.
Yeah, how do you feel about the team this year? Returning five of your top six scorers from last year, good recruiting class coming in as you're getting going on that side of things here in your second season. How do you feel about the team overall?
I mean, I think our recruiting, is in a good place. I mean, everyone's a year older, a year stronger, a year more mature, both physically and mentally. you know, the one thing that's been apparent to me and to our staff, and I think even to the kids, is that, you know, there's six new faces this year. Last year, albeit that I was here as an assistant, you know, we did a lot of things differently, and there was new things to learn collectively, not only from our players' perspectives, but from our staff perspective. So everything was new. And this year, we're up and running, and it's a lot smoother, I guess, if you will, this year. So, you know, I'm confident in that group. You know, you mentioned us returning a lot of players who played key roles for us. I think that's real important. You know, I think we have as much depth as we've had on defense in a long time. Mm-hmm. We feel confident in our goaltenders, and I'm excited to see, you know, see guys get out there and perform.
Yeah, Liam Blackburn, Angus Cruikshank, both guys that are really impressive in terms of their top line ability for the group. And I want to hear you talk a little bit about from the net out, and if where that lies in terms of your focus. It's said that a group of forward lines can really control the play, but to me, that defensive core is so integral to getting that first pass out of the zone, minding their defensive responsibilities, but also knowing when to apply pressure, when not to apply pressure. 5-on-5, in just about, whether it's hockey, whether it's the Hockey East in the past, whether it's the NHL, 5-on-5 is pretty even. And when you make those decisions to pinch up a little bit, to put a little more pressure on, that's when you can kind of gain something in the 5-on-5 setting. But you have to be smart about that. How do you see your defenseman controlling what you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, so the biggest thing, to be honest with you, is that you have to have some mobility back there. I mean, the game has changed so much in the last 10 years. You need to have mobility on with your decor for a lot of reasons, and whether it's defending or transition play or what have you. I mean, we don't talk forward group and decor in the sense when we talk about attacking offensively. We want to attack in a 4- and a 5-man wave, and in order to do that, you have to have your defenseman got to be able to break pucks out, but also be able to join the rush and get back. We feel like we have a real mobile decor this year. We've got some size back there as well, and led by Max Gilden and Anthony Wise and Bent Mass, guys who returned for us. And the addition of Callie Erickson, who's a young player, freshman that comes to us from Sweden. And we feel like we have some real good mobility and some puck movers back there. And then their job is to get the puck in the hands of the forwards as fast as possible. And we feel like we have some good team speed up front and some guys that are creative and guys you've mentioned and Liam and Angus. But, whether it's Charlie Kelleher, I think there's only three players in hockey that have scored 20 goals on active rosters this year in our league. We have one of them, Patrick Grasso, who scored 20 goals as a freshman. So, I think we have some depth, and I'm just excited to see our group get out there and compete again against a really good NCAC team in Miami, who has a new coach, and there's a newfound excitement out here. So it's going to be a tough test for us.
That's UNH men's hockey coach Mike Sousa joining us here on the Press Pass Night, the show presented by the Prescription Center. In this segment of the program, presented by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. Saw that Ty Conklin was back with you guys, volunteer assistant head coach, as well as working with the goaltenders. And I'm interested in your take on the impact that a guy like Ty has in getting the ear of college hockey players or hockey players in general. I mean, went to Stanley Cup Finals 3 times, played 9 years in the league. He has a great pedigree. Is there a credence that guys give to somebody like that? I think probably initially, but what they kind of have to prove themselves just as anybody else does, right, in terms of their interest in the player and the value of the information? Or do you find that if a guy has a pedigree like that, they're automatically going to get more respect and the ear of the players in a way that other guys won't?
That's a good question. I think you have instant credibility. Ty Conklin's got instant credibility when he walks through the doors of our locker room. So doesn't Jeff Giuliano, and anyone that's played at the highest level in the world has instant credibility with our players. And then in order to win over the players, you have to obviously know what you're talking about as it pertains to coaching, and the players got to know that you care about them. And Ty's proven those things to be true from the day he said that he wanted to be involved with our team again. He spent ample time with our goaltenders. He sees the game from a goaltender's perspective, but he also sees the game from a level that is unique to him, because as you mentioned, he's been around some of the game's great players, played with Nick Lidstrom and in Detroit and some of those great teams, and Sidney Crosby in Pittsburgh. But he's also played for great coaches and Mike Babcock and Ken Hitchcock when he was in Columbus, and there's a wealth of experience and knowledge, that Ty possesses, and he's not only able to be an asset for our goaltenders, which is obvious because he's got a background in coaching and development coaching with the Blues, so that was a no-brainer for us in terms of bringing him on board. The sort of thing that was really most appealing to me was he adds value to not only our goaltenders but to our whole roster, because of his experiences, and then he adds value to our coaching staff, and he's already done that in terms of, hey, what about this here in this situation? So it's not just a linear conversation regarding goalies. He's a part of the staff, and he's adding his two cents as it pertains to the forecheck and offensive zone play. And that was the reason I really pursued bringing him on board. I knew he would enjoy it. It was a little twist in the arm to get him to come back, but I knew he would enjoy it. And then him being able to build a relationship with our goaltenders, I guess it's just the icing on the cake for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome for you that he's been a sponge to those guys that you referenced before, because they think about the game, as you referenced, at a top level. And he has seen, not just how they speak, but what they do behind closed doors, their actions, how they look at various circumstances. And that is just an absolute huge win for you guys to have somebody that is going to provide that consultation and say, well, this is something that Babcock did, or Nick Lidstrom would do this. And that's obviously is huge for you guys. Looking at the league this year, you open up against Boston College, your home schedule. That's coming up on the 1st of November. How do you view the league and where you fit into it?
I think it's the best conference in college hockey. And, you can, on any night, you can go out, win a game. On any night, you can go out and lose a game. And you need to bring your best at each and every night. I see this year being unlike any other year. I mean, I love these preseason polls because, oftentimes they really don't mean much.
Right.
Come the middle of the season, I tell our guys, oh, there's only one poll that matters, and that's at the end of the year. Our focus, naturally it's on this weekend, but, when we do get back in the league play in a couple of weeks, it's always exciting, right? Like, if you're a top team in hockey, typically, you find your way into the NCAA tournament. That's obviously the goal of every program in the country, but it's certainly one of our goals. And, we have a mindset here, though. I know it's boring, but our focus is one day at a time, and that seems so far in the distance to me right now. Even talking about the Hockey East play, because we have the three non-league games before we get into conference play. But it is exciting to play in Hockey East. As I mentioned before, I'm biased, but I think it's the top league in college hockey, and I don't think this year will be any different in terms of the type of competition you see from top to bottom.
Mike, appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you throughout the year.
All right, Chris. Thanks a lot.
Mike Sousa, head coach of the UNH men's hockey team, joining us here on the program. They open up their season tonight at Miami of Ohio, play again there tomorrow. Home schedule opens up against BC. That's always a lot of fun coming up on November the 1st. This is the Press Pass here on KXL. I am Chris Ryan. Press Pass tonight presented by the Prescription Center, and that segment brought to you by the Concord Youth Hockey Association. This is the Press Pass here on KXL 1-9, 1450 and NHTalkRadio.com. Press Pass Night presented by the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at NHLawOffice.com. Patriots winners last night against the Giants in a 35-14 victory over the Giants at Gillette Stadium. This is getting to be kind of a theme for the Patriots this year. Look at the NFL, and there's not a lot of good teams out there. And we've talked about this, obviously, throughout the course of the year and even projecting out with the schedule, that things are going to be pretty easy for the Patriots. And you know, even when they're appearing to be tested a little bit during the course of the game, you still have a pretty good feel for where this is going to head. Patriots win 35-14 over the Giants. Dave, how are you?
Doing good, thanks.
Your takeaways from the Patriots' victory against the Giants, improving to 6-0 on the season and doing so in pretty Patriot-esque type of fashion outside of Tom Brady's two rushing touchdowns.
My biggest takeaway is that I don't know if I ever thought they were in jeopardy of giving it away, or you know, the Giants coming from behind and actually winning the game. But just the fact that it was 21-14 with about 10 minutes to go, Giants ball. If you look at everything that had happened to that point, it should never have been that close. To that point, Daniel Jones had been picked three times. Patriots had got a touchdown on a blocked punt. They'd held the ball for, it was within like 2 or 3 seconds of exactly twice as long as the Giants. Giants had converted 2 third downs. And yet it was 21-14, and the reason was clear. It was just that the Patriots' offense was not good enough and frankly has not been good enough to punish teams for that type of disparity. And as good as the defense has been, or as good, and as good as it was last night, you know, not that 64-yard touchdown notwithstanding, to have that game that close and that uncertain as late as it was, that, as much as anything, to me, was a big red flag for where this offense is at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. I mean, the red flag is, it seems, you know, kind of, I don't know, harsh for a 6-0 football team with Tom Brady as quarterback. how about a yellow flag? Can we do a yellow flag?
Got it.
A big yellow flag. All right. So, yeah, I mean, the good news here is the Patriots defense is even better than we thought. I mean, we've talked about this Patriots defense for several years now as being a good defense, one that you know, bends but doesn't break. That's been kind of Patriots MO for a long period of time. This Patriots defense makes plays. Special teams makes plays. That has not always been the case with the Patriots defense and special teams. So, you know, what we thought was going to be a balanced attack, a rushing attack that was going to offset, you know, some of the deficiencies perhaps in the passing game and with the offensive line's injuries, has actually been, it's been the defensive scoring and field position supremacy and the special teams that have been able to have a lot of success for, you know, the Patriots. That has been a huge positive surprise. Now, yes, I mean, you look at the Patriots offense and you look at Brady's line and Edelman's line and you know, even Sony Michel to some extent. Brandon Bolden had obviously the big, you know, 21-yard breakout and the touchdown in the first quarter. But, I mean, Brady's 334, 31 for 41, no touchdowns passing but 2 rushing, interception. Michel, again, is 3.9 per carry, and he had a 26-yard run, so he's not getting a lot per carry. Big fourth down, wasn't able to get that early. Edelman was targeted 15 times, 9 receptions. He dropped a couple. So, yeah, I mean, the Patriots' offense does not look great, but again, you look out at the landscape of the NFL, and considering how good the defense and special teams is, I mean, does it matter?
Well, I keep reading that, and I read it this morning in a couple places. It's this idea that, and I've attempted to write it myself, but this idea that the Patriots' offense is not good enough. Well, just think about that. Think about that. Like, the Patriots' offense is not good enough. Good enough for what? To win a Super Bowl? Well,
it's like you could say like good enough compared to them or good enough right now, but I mean, it's pretty clear that who's maybe the Chiefs, but the Chiefs are going to have to come to Foxborough. I don't see the Patriots offense right now. That's why I said a yellow flag. I don't see the Patriots offense right now being looking at it and saying, well, they can't win a Super Bowl with this offense.
And it's not like it was 5 years ago, where if the Patriots offense wasn't good enough, the Patriots weren't good enough. This is a team that can win a Super Bowl behind this defense. I mean, the defense has given up 3 touchdowns and scored 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And
In six games.
And one of the touchdowns was, the ball didn't even get beyond the goal line. It was Josh Allen lunging over with his ginormous arms and just touching the ball to the area above the goal line. And the other two have been the last 2 weeks, the 65-yard run, which it was the one play this year where they didn't tackle. And last night, the 64-yard touchdown pass, which was honestly a pretty well-thrown ball and got between the safety and the corner fell down, and off you go. And so it's two plays in six games where they haven't done it, and you just project that moving forward. And yes, the level of competition they faced hasn't been the best, and it will get tougher. You know, Carson Wentz in Philly, Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, those are all coming up on the schedule. Dak Prescott and Zeke Elliott and the Cowboys. I guess we'll learn more about the defense then, but I don't think you go from, regardless of who the competition is, I don't think you go from 3 touchdowns in 6 games to just not being able to get it done, especially when if you extend it one more to the 7th game, you shut down one of the best offenses in NFL history and held them to 3 points. Good enough is very relative, because you don't need Brady and Co. to carry you. You just need them to get you enough. And you know, 35 points last night. Granted, 21 was from the defensive special teams, but Brady still over 300 yards. Michelle close to 90 yards by the end of the night. Is that enough? If this defense is anything close to what we think it is, yes, it is enough.
The Patriots net points 142 to the good. You look at the rest of the league, the best team other than the Patriots is the San Francisco 49ers. I don't think anybody saw that coming. At 70. So the Patriots are double where the 49ers are at in net points. Granted, they've played an extra game, or actually two extra games, but they've only played one more game than most of the NFL. That is absolutely incredible. And again, you look at the landscape of the NFL in terms of the Patriots winning a Super Bowl. The Ravens, I like the Ravens a lot, but they barely squeaked out a win in Pittsburgh to get to 3-2 on the year, or they would have been 2-3. The Kansas City Chiefs are great. They're 4-1, but they're going to probably have to come to Foxborough to play in the AFC Championship game. The NFC, I don't see anybody there that's going to beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Of course, as we've seen, anything can happen. The Cowboys, I don't know. I'm not impressed with the Cowboys in big situations. The Eagles, yeah, I mean, they scare you a little bit. Packers, no. Saints, no. 49ers, no. Seahawks, no. I mean, it's the Patriots' defense and special teams are good enough, and you have the faith and confidence in Josh McDaniel and Tom Brady that when they're in a big situation, they will figure out ways to make it happen. I mean, they have the weapons. They'll make changes in regards to the offensive line if they have to. I'm not worried. I am. You know, you do see the difference. You do see the reason why they brought in Antonio Brown and why they took that chance, and how that changed the offense. When Josh Gordon was invisible, he was only targeted once last night. So I get that. And we're not, I mean, we're only 6 games into the season. It doesn't mean that they're not going to bring in somebody else to see, you know, what works. I mean, Kraft was begging Gronk to come back. I mean, there's a lot of I'd say still consternation about the offense, but I think that there could definitely be a some changes still that occur.
And here's the reason they're in a great spot. I mean, obviously they're 6-0, but you mentioned all those teams, and you know, you look down the road, and what are the threats? Except that they already have, they have zero losses, and the Chiefs have one. Beyond that, nobody has less than two. Well, except the Bills, who are in your division, and I don't really think Patriots are at risk of losing the division to the Bills. But what that means is you're already, like, fast-tracked for a bye, if not home field advantage throughout. And that means, okay, now you look at the AFC and you're like, we just have to win a couple of games. At least one of those is going to be at home, and you feel good about that. They've won 19 in a row at Gillette Stadium. And chances are, you know, you're already a game up on Kansas City. All you have to do, essentially, is hold serve and win that game against the Chiefs, and you're going to be the number one seed. So then you're looking at two home wins, and then, you know, the Super Bowl is what it is. It's a crapshoot. We'll deal with that when we get there. But they're in a terrific spot as far as even playoff positioning at this point, six games in. And then you look at the schedule. They played twice in the last 5 days. They play three times in the next 37 days.
Yeah.
And in that period of time is the trade deadline. So if they're looking to make an acquisition, whether it's a receiver, an offensive lineman, whatever the case might be, they have a tremendous opportunity to get that person and get him up to speed without needing to do it, you know, through a grueling stretch of games. They have 11 days off here to get a little healthier, play the Jets on a Monday night, then you got the Browns and the Ravens, then you have your actual bye. So they're at sort of a lull in where things are at. And it's after the bye that you get the Eagles, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs, those teams. So it's just all working out, and they're in a terrific spot, probably as good of a spot, if not better, than they could have imagined, save for maybe a few injuries that are starting to pile up.
No, you're right, and I think we're looking forward to when the Patriots start to play high-quality opponents, and as you referenced, that starts, I don't know if we want to call Cleveland a high-quality opponent, but they're a good test at this point. They're going to be in Foxborough on the 27th. And then, you know, as we've talked about, the Baltimore game is going to be fun. And so we've been looking forward to that game for a while because I like that team a lot, and we'll see how the Patriots match up with them. And I think you made a good point, too, about the Patriots coming off of a very short week and, the game in Washington and then right back at it against the Giants. That may have something to do with the offense, you know, not performing at a high level either. Injuries, too, with Dorsett, Burkhead. So, I mean, the Patriots certainly have, reasons that you can look at and say this is why perhaps things did not go as well on the offensive side of things. You look at the 35 points, but as we've talked about, it's kind of misleading. The game was close late at 21-14. That's our resident sports expert, Dave D'Onofrio, here on Hampshire Now, 1-9-14-15, and NHTalkRadio.com. This hour, the program is presented by New England College, as well as the Prescription Center, and this segment of the show brought to you by Rath Young and Pignatelli and RathLaw.com. Really interesting game last night, Astros and Rays. And the game went pretty much as I had expected, because Garrett Cole is really, really good. And, just the Houston Astros, we talk about home field advantage in baseball. The Yankees obviously have a great one, but the Astros do too. And it points to even more what the Red Sox were able to do last year when you consider how loud that building is, how well they play at that field. And there was not a surprise for me last night that the Astros rolled against the Rays. I mean, there was, I'm sure, a little bit of concern in Houston, perhaps amongst the team even, when you looked at the Dodgers fall at home, the Braves fall at home the day before. But the Astros are a special team, and this is going to set up an absolutely amazing American League Championship Series.
Yeah, we were one Rays a win from all what I would consider the fun teams having been knocked out of the playoffs.
Right.
But the fact that the Astros are there and it's against the Yankees, it's the two teams that since May have been the two teams, the class of the American League, and the two teams you wanted to see in this position.
Maybe even baseball.
If you're a baseball fan. Yeah, I questioned the Astros' decision to use Verlander in Game 4. When you're up 2-1, I never like to look like you're desperate and kind of rush a guy back. But then when you consider they did have Garrett Cole in their back pocket, and we'll see what the Cy Young voters say, but Garrett Cole arguably was better than Justin Verlander this year. So you have him waiting in Game 5. You feel good about it. You saw last night why that was. And I'm with you. That's a special atmosphere. It's a special group. you know, it reminds me a little bit of the Royals of a few years ago, except that the top level talent is actually better and they've sustained it longer. Hopefully they're a team that can continue it and retain these guys, because it's a fun situation. It's a good team. They play exciting baseball. The postseason in the last couple of years has been more exciting because they've been in it. And if you're a Red Sox fan at this point, that's what you're hoping for. Takes out the Yankees.
So, you know, I think Garrett Cole's performance this year also shows why the Red Sox were, I mean, there's a lot of reasons, we've talked about this a lot, why they were way too early to sign Chris Sale. And Sale is not the individual that I would have locked up. It would have been Mookie Betts before Chris Sale. But anyway, Garrett Cole would be a really good option for the Red Sox. And in a Patriots kind of cold-blooded type of way, you would, you know, think about Sale for one more year, then moving on there, hoping that JD opts out, and signing, you know, Garrett Cole, taking him away from your best, from your chief rival, really. I mean, the Yankees, I guess, are to some extent, but the Astros, to me, are the best team in the American League, and we'll obviously find that out here in the American League Championship Series. But you know, Garrett Cole, I think, would have been a much better long-term option for the Red Sox than Chris Sale.
He's a guy who, you know, he's a free agent this year. He was traded for 2 years ago. The Pirates didn't get a ton for him. The Red Sox, I don't know what their farm system was exactly at the point where he was traded, but he was a guy that was on the Red Sox and the Yankees' radar. Houston comes in and has a package that gets him, gets it done. It's kind of symptomatic of where the Red Sox are at now. It's the David Price contract. It's now the Chris Sale contract. They've committed themselves to these other guys for so long and for so much money. You know, they don't have the flexibility to go out and explore things like that right now. And that's going to be up to the new GM to figure out how you get your head above water and whether or not Sale and Price are still able to be the guys that help you do that.
What happens with the Dodgers now, in your view? I mean, that's a really good team that has playoff problems, and Clayton Kershaw is probably, you know, the biggest problem they have in regards to the playoffs. You wonder if Dave Roberts is going to survive. There's some question about whether he was going to even survive after the World Series last year. I think that's a situation where you have a really good team, and that team is probably going to get broken up despite the fact that they're a really good team.
I don't know what's going to happen. First question I have, if I'm the front office, is why is Joe Kelly in the game in the 10th inning of a do-or-die situation? I know he'd been good for the last few months, but you just look at the way that game was progressing. I don't know if you can't trust him at all, but with the bases loaded and nobody out, you've put yourself in that position. You got to do something. And I don't blame Roberts for going to Kershaw. I blame Kershaw for giving up the two home runs. Buehler was obviously great. If it was me, I'm always a little more conservative than most teams in this situation. I would just run it back out there next year. I think there's a lot of good young players on that team, a good foundation. They've been to two straight World Series, didn't get to a third, but I would try it for one more year. But if there's a hangover from this, I think Dave Roberts is certainly on the hot seat.
Yeah, I think that they're trending downwards, and you need to change that trend. I don't think that you should blow it up by any stretch of the imagination. You have a really good team there. You want to fine-tune the bullpen a little bit. I think a lack of faith in the other relievers is what was the reason that Joe Kelly was out there. So I think that that's a key for the Dodgers. They need to get that bullpen to a place where they're more confident. And, you know, bring in perhaps another free agent to spice things up a little bit, make a deal of some sort to kind of change the team a little bit. Dave Roberts, yeah, I think that there's probably a pretty good chance that he is going to be a victim of that change as well, keeping the team together for the most part, but just changing things a little bit to try to you know, switch the trajectory for them. Dave, as always, appreciate you joining us for the program.
Thanks, Chris.
That is Dave D'Onofrio. This has been the Press Pass here on KXL. Dave with Boston.com talking some Patriots and Major League Baseball playoffs. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody.